Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time. When I beat Sonny Liston, I told you today I'm still the greatest of all time. Never again defeat me.
Never again
say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again
make me the underdog until I'm about 50 years old.
That's right.
Then you might get me.
That is better than most. Better than most.
To the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
Up the shelf, 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe it, Barrett Holmes? Yes!
Goated Podcast. Thanks for being here, everybody. We have a special guest today. Good friend of mine I've known for a long time. Yeah. Family friends. Another family in this beautiful town I grew up in, Naples. I grew up in Miami, but spent most of my adult life in Naples. Very blessed to say that because Naples is gaining traction. Everyone wants to live here. I think the last couple of years, when we moved here, no one knew what Naples was. Now it's a hot spot. Now it's, you're lucky you live in Naples.
Yeah.
And now people know it. But a legendary family here. He's got a big family. And he is the most relatable for me entrepreneur in this town that's had a bunch of things he's done. He's founded companies. He's helped companies launch. He has been a part of exits, the enter the market, the disruptors. He's done a lot. So I'm excited today to have DeAndre Simmons on the show.
Hey, appreciate you, my brother.
Yes, sir. And I'll tell you a little bit more. The family, he's got athletically, we have a lot of athletes on this show and a lot of golf focus and sports focus the last couple episodes, but he played a couple of sports. I know a couple of schools. You guys moved a lot with a lot of kids and dominated. I knew you were a good football player and your brothers, you had a brother that played pro or played
North Carolina. Yeah. You're talking about Malik. Yeah.
Malik. Malik Troy. Was a stud. Troy. And, who was the fastest? There was one that was Malik was,
I'd give it to Malik, right? Yeah, I'd give it to Malik.
I remember seeing Malik go from like, he'd be part of the argument where the field needs to be widened because he'd run a slant route and the slant would run like he'd almost be out of bounds from the other side. He was so fast. but stud athletes. And then you talk to them and just solid dudes, your family, your parents did you right, raised you right. Your dad's the man. Mom's the man. Her mom's the best. And your sisters are solid. I grew up with a couple of your sisters. But, and then on that subject, your brother, I just saw yesterday, or someone told me yesterday, he's like the first VP of Suncoast Bank.
Yep.
The first African-American VP of Suncoast Bank. Suncoast Credit Union, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's so sick. I got to reach out to him.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Bunch of hustlers.
Doing us proud, man. It's crazy. You know, I was born in Miami as well. And we moved to Southwest Florida in 2000, exactly. And, you know, my parents actually split when we were young. So we moved over here with just our mom. So when we first got here, it was definitely a huge culture shock because I grew up in Miami. I was at Myrtle Grove Elementary School, which was right in Miami Gardens. And I remember it was just a totally different type of atmosphere, curriculum, like, the teachers, you couldn't call them anything but Mr. or Mrs. this, right? So I leave that, you know, from the type of lunches we would get, you know, just lower quality food. Just everything was different, right?
Yeah.
Lower income neighborhood. And then we moved to Naples, and we lived right off of Immokalee in Windsong Circle, which is right there on Immokalee Road. And I remember I went to, why am I forgetting this? Right next to the Gulf Coast.
Oak Ridge?
No, Laurel Oak.
Laurel Oak.
I was at Laurel Oak Elementary School. And my fourth grade teacher, his name was John Morey. And that's how he introduced himself. Hi, I'm John Morey. And that was just so weird to me. I was like, yo, I've never had a teacher ever like just introduce himself like that to me. And calling him by his first name at that. So I was like, hi, John, I'm DeAndre, right? So then, of course, you know, I go to lunch for the first time. They've got a whole salad bar. Yeah. Like, I'm like, wait a second. I see they've got a whole little outreach of pickles and all the different stuff you can deck your salad bowl. And I love pickles at the time. So I like deck my tray out with pickles. And the teacher looked at me, she said, you better eat all those pickles. And I sure enough did. You know, I smashed all those because I had never seen anything like that before.
No, it's a culture shock.
Yeah, very much. And then we had a recess after. I was like, wait, recess? I just knew recess from the cartoon. I didn't know that was a real thing. So that was like very early on. And when it came to, you know, sports, you know, I actually didn't play football until my freshman year of high school. We played. I'll take that back. My mom signed me and Troy up for Optimist football for our church in Miami. New Birth Baptist Church Saints. That was our team. And that was my real first chance at football. But I honestly don't really count that because I wasn't mentally into it. I just kind of was there. And about that church, yo, my mom used to drive every Sunday from Naples to our church in Miami, New Birth Baptist Church. We would go to a 4-hour service. You know, Black Baptist Church is different. It's like a whole, it's a whole situation.
An hour and a half drive, by the way, at least.
Every Sunday, an hour and a half there, hour and a half back. We'd go to church, we would make it in time for the 9 a.m. service, mind you.
Oh, my God.
And I would wake up some mornings, be like, please forget. Please don't. Mom, please don't wait. And sure enough, lights come on. All right, let's go. Her being a single mom, like, that was her foundation for us to raise us, you know, like, you know, no knock at my father because he was very much still involved with us, right? But not having him physically present, like, my mom had to play both of those roles. So that was really her grounding foundation for us. So we would do that, you know, every Sunday religiously. And I would pray to God, like, please, Lord.
Let me get
one Sunday where I can just sleep in. It never happened. But so Optimist, like I said, I don't really count that. But then I got to Barron Collier my freshman year. And, you know, I started playing fullback. I always wanted to be a running back. I don't.
But you're a bigger boy.
It wasn't even that. I was actually, my freshman year, I was about 5'10", 180, almost 190. I'd say buck 90. Yeah, I give myself buck 90. And I didn't really get into 220s until I got to my senior year. But I always wanted to play running back. And I didn't really know the sport because, again, it's a mental game.
Yeah.
And I wasn't mentally as invested in it, I guess you can say, because I was a basketball player, believe it or not.
Really?
So, believe it or not. We all played basketball. My dad played college basketball at St. Thomas. That's how he met my mom, actually. He moved from Chicago to Miami to play ball at St. Thomas, and we all grew up hooping. And I remember one summer, actually, right before high school, I thought I was going to play basketball because I spent the entire summer. We were in Atlanta because my dad owned a chicken restaurant, a Harold's Chicken restaurant. And I was hooping all summer. That's when And1 was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I kid you not, dude, I trained every single day.
Basketball.
Just practicing. No, I was practicing And1 moves. I would watch the And1 mixtape volume 3, 4. But I'd do it all. Jumping
Chris,
over.
Chris, did you ever see And1?
No.
You've never seen And1 mixtapes?
Brother, you've been robbed.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
And you need to look up And1 mixtape volume 4.
Today,
there's a whole documentary on it. There's a whole documentary on And1, the And1 tour. It was basically street ball.
Okay.
But they would travel around the country and do the most ridiculous tricks, like slam dunking it between their legs, 360s.
Yep.
You had Hot Sauce, who had the greatest handles of all time. White Chocolate, or the Professor.
The Professor.
I know the Professor. Okay, I've seen some of his stuff.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this white guy can ball.
I think it's more the algorithm knows I'm white.
No, but that was his start. The And1 mixtape tour was his
white
start.
White Chocolate right away.
Yeah.
the guy would be on the street, like, announcing, too. I always loved, like, watching the announcement, the guy with the mic, like roasting people. He's like, oh, he's going to cook them. He's going to get them.
Yo.
Oh, don't do
it. So imagine, right? All the hype and energy around And1. Yes. I'm like, yo, I'm going to play in this tournament because they were coming to Atlanta. My dad's like, yo, I got you. I know I know one of the guys. Because my dad always knows somebody.
Yeah.
I kid you not. He always knows somebody. So he's like, yo, I know the promoter for it. Yeah, I'm going to get you on that open run. So I'm like, yo, all I got to do is get on that open run. I'm a ball out. I'm a play on the tour. I might not travel with him, but I'm going to at least get a jersey because I love the jerseys at the time. And sure enough, bro, I practiced religiously from sun up to sundown, practicing moves until like the week came. And my dad had Troy and I play against one another. And, you know, Troy's the hooper of the family. Like Troy, like to this day, he still plays twice a week.
Really?
And he's just balling on people. Yeah, VP balling on people.
Jeez.
And I would... Like, it would get to a point where I would, like, be beating him. Mind you, Troy was always the one that would beat me. Right. Granted, I'm the older brother. But Troy was just naturally gifted at the, you know, with hoops. Because, like you said, you had Joey Woods and Mike Libo here.
Yeah.
They, you know, Troy played on the Dogs back in the day. Yep. Naples Dogs, which they revived recently. Like, yes. Glad to see that. So, again, I thought I was going to hoop when I got to Barron. So, football was the last. I'm like, yeah, I'll use football to get in shape for basketball.
Yeah.
And basketball tryouts come around, and I make the last cut, and I ended up getting cut. So, that's when Billy Sparacio at the time.
Barron
Collier. He came up to me. He's like, no, you need to train for football.
Love it.
And I was a late bloomer. Yeah, I got in the weight room.
Yeah.
Got in the weight room. But I was really a late bloomer when it came to athletics because – you know, while I was physically built to do it, like the confidence to actually play the sport was something I honestly struggled with a lot growing up.
Yes.
And it wasn't until my sophomore year, I remember my dad came down and he asked Coach Billy, he was like, tell him to his face what kind of player he is. And Coach Billy Sparacio looked at my dad, he's soft. Bro,
in front of you,
in front of me, right there. My dad, no, because my dad wanted me to hear that.
Yeah,
Coach Billy, he's soft, and I was like, embarrassed was not even a word. It was just like it was like something just flipped.
Yeah,
and I'm like, switch flip, and I ended up training, getting just doing the due diligence, doing the hard work, training, running, ran track. And I remember it wasn't until my sophomore year, the summer we went to a USF camp, that I really started to build that confidence.
Nice.
And I remember at a certain point where I was doing things against teams. I'm like, yo, how did I do that? Like, I was like, yo, I was starting to build it. So I'm like building this momentum. And then if you remember Barron Collier, they had the thing, the Elite 11, which was the combination of the fastest, strongest kids on the team.
Yes.
And they took all of your lifts, your power clean, your squats, your 40 time. And then they put you on this list. And remember, they had the black shirts.
Yeah.
And I always told myself, called me soft, I'm like, yo, I'm going to get one of them black shirts. And sure enough, dude, like I built this momentum. I built this confidence. And Coach Jensen named it. He said it out. He's like, our pride and joy, DeAndre Simmons. He's on the Elite 11. So, of course, I'm on this high, like, yo, I'm about to come in. And I remember Coach Sparacio telling like my mom, like, yo, DeAndre is actually really good.
Yeah.
As a running back, because again, I had to build it.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, my mom's were moving.
Yes.
We picked up and we moved. We moved to Riverdale. We moved to Lehigh. And I ended up going to Riverdale. So that was such a game breaking moment for me because like I felt like I'd built so much and it was just like stripped away.
Yeah.
Just like that.
That happens.
It does, right? In life, in business.
Yeah.
And that was one of my first lessons early on. And when I was at Riverdale, you know, I got there my junior year. Same mindset, of course, but I didn't play running back. They actually switched me to defense.
Mm, I thought so.
Yeah, they ended up switching me to defense. I played nose guard, bro.
That's totally different.
I was 5'11", probably 215 at this point, and they switched me to nose guard. So... naturally,
that's a tough spot. Like if you're tough, you get switched to nose guard. If you're having a problem, I mean, if you can occupy two people at nose guard, that's your job.
And my thing was I was a running back, right? So like I already naturally have a solid lower body. So like they put me in the trenches because I got off the ball faster than everybody and I already had natural, you know, pretty good strength up top. So that was like really the reason they put me there. was because they needed somebody on the in the interior to be able to do that. Because I got to Riverdale the year after they had Terrence Cody, Siobhan Walker, and all these guys, yes. right? So not saying I replaced Terrence Cody or anything like that, but it was just one of those things. Again, one of those things that, you know, I got a chance to play early and just had to, you know, put my head down literally and figure it out. So
all that you went through, it's part of, I'm glad you kind of went through that because I didn't know. I mean, as a kid, you just know this guy moved to Riverdale.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know if what happened. And I was older, but I knew what was going on. We knew the family and everything. Right. So, but it's good it helps me see how you were kind of developed through those scenarios at a young age. Oh, like,
you
same for
know.
Me.
We haven't even got to the yeah. we haven't even got to the meat of it yet.
No, I know. I love it. And that Riverdale, that right there makes a ton of sense because same for me. I mean, we've talked about, we all go through things that built us to this point, right? And we have genes from our family that you want to harness, you want to feed the good genes, and then you want to cut out the genes that right. aren't good. And all those experiences, probably looking back, you wouldn't pass them up. It sucked at the time, right. but obviously you look back and you're like, oh, God had a plan for that. God
oh,
had,
he did. It's he awesome. Did, 100%.
The and I know your brothers went through stuff too, and everything. I mean, when you go through those moves, I hated. When I moved here from Miami, I had a similar thing. I was so upset. I was like, I am not down for this. No one even asked me, and I'm 14. Right. Like, of course. Right.
Yeah.
My dad's thinking, right. we're making more money. We're going to a better area. Trust me. And I'm like, these kids are soft. Well, then I get over here, and I was already almost getting in trouble in Miami because it's hard to stay out of trouble. You come over here, and you're a thug. To anybody, you move from Miami, you're like, oh,
it's different.
They're like, oh, this kid's a thug. And then I was asked to play every sport. Never once was I asked to play a sport in Miami. Nobody's like, hey, little Kevin, redhead, come on out here to play football. And in Naples, I'm like, I'm playing every sport. I'm like, okay, this is all right. So a month in, and then we were at a country club, similar situation. Someone invited us to a country club. Never been to a country club in my life. We had a buffet breakfast on a Sunday after church. I'm like, this is all right. Now I look back, I'm like, same thing. You go through storms. You go through something. As a kid, you think, this is the end of the world, man. This is the end of the world as I know it. I don't know how I'm going to get past this. And we do it as adults, too. We've talked about it as adults. My daughter broke her arm yesterday or 2 days ago, and my wife's going, oh, no, I'm the worst. And right now it's like, hey, God protected her from something else. She's 100%. Going to Taekwondo today. She's not going to partake
in
Taekwondo.
Where are you doing Taekwondo now?
The Star? I think what you told me, no?
No.
Fort Myers.
Okay, no. The one Harmony's at is a world championship in Gateway.
Okay, Star, I don't know how we got. She's in a homeschool co-op with one of the parents that's in at Star, but she loves it. But obviously, Ava's not going to do Taekwondo for the next couple weeks in a cast.
I mean, she could kick.
Yeah, she's already
she,
doing
she
it.
She could throw kick kicks.
That's yeah. it.
But
she'll
we're
be
go,
she'll
we're
be
going
all right.
through it.
Those yeah. kids are they valuable
heal fast.
At that
they,
age.
They heal yeah. fast,
True.
Bro.
No, I'm fine. I mean, and there's a plan for it. We know as adults now.
100%.
On the business side, so last we talked, you had opened a gym. You had
oh,
founded
yeah.
a gym.
Not so much founded. So it was a new gym that okay. had opened. And a friend of mine who worked there as their lead trainer had reached out. I was like, hey, I think that this would be a good opportunity to connect with the owner because she's looking to do something different to bring in more clientele, being a new gym, et cetera. And at the time, I was representing a company called Able Technologies, which
okay,
is
yes.
which
software.
Is, yeah, so it's a software app based out of Norway. And essentially, it was started by a good friend of mine, Simon Lauksen. He used to play soccer at Coastal Carolina. And he started an app back then with one of his roommates or teammates that essentially they were able to keep each other accountable over the summer, training each other. Mm. And they would just send
like
each
a
other.
Check-in.
It was like,
check-in.
It was like a check-in. They would send each I other like workouts that they would check, you know, check the boxes and things like
accountability.
That.
Accountability.
Yeah. Exactly. And it eventually grew into a fully fledged platform that you can plug in, you know, nutrition, workouts for a month, programs. It was really catered to trainers.
Yeah.
At the time is when COVID hit.
Yeah.
Trainers and gyms were basically obsolete, right? Yep. People were working out online. People were doing things at home. So this was one of those things that made a lot of sense. And
yeah.
For me, I thought it would be great to integrate this app within that gym as, you know, giving people both options.
For sure.
So that's how that partnership ultimately started. We were able to get, we spent the whole day shooting film as far as the workouts. So the workouts you can plug into the app and essentially share the video of the trainers doing the correct form so that people could, again, do it. And it's all tracked in real time. So once it's done, the trainer can message you directly and say, hey, this is, you know, this is, you did this right. Good job. Blah, blah, blah. So that was a really cool experience when we first connected. But that actually didn't really last too much longer after we met up at the gym that day. I had actually transitioned into the entertainment space with a good friend of mine, DJ Malik,
yes.
Curate, and I was doing the sales for them. So I was handling the bookings.
Nice.
People wanting to book a DJ, a fire DJ for their wedding. I would talk to the couple, get them their perfect DJ based off of their taste, flavor, yeah. et cetera. And did that for about 2 years. Yeah, nice. Did that for about 2 years after the fact.
I think so. I saw that booking app, too. We were trying to get Uncle Luke. Right?
You're trying to get
or
Uncle Luke.
Was that
Luke.
A different one?
No, I think that might have been something different.
Malik?
I think that was Malik.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Malik's always got a new idea.
Yeah, yeah. Like it. No, yeah. All of us. That's why, I was telling Chris, it's dangerous when we got together because we'd be like, When I went to the gym that day, I'm like, he's got a, let me get the scale, let me get the app,
yeah.
let's get going on this. Let me connect you to A-Rod's gyms or whatever. And we sent them some samples and everything. That's what I wanted to talk about today, too, mostly, is like, you go through all those as an entrepreneur. First of all, I like to say, and I'm learning now, not everyone's made to be an entrepreneur. There's some people that are trying to be entrepreneurs that maybe you're not gifted to do that. And I'm still constantly evaluating whether I am. I mean, I've done pretty well. And I messaged Chris something the other day, and I can't remember what it was, but you just said it. Like, I feel like we're always... What was it that I sent you?
Yeah, so I mean, we talked about this the other day, and it's something I'd love to get your take on, Dre. But you can be doing a lot of things and moving very fast without actually moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. And
100%.
As an entrepreneur, I'd love to get your take on kind of how you focus and ensure that you're moving forward in all of these endeavors, you know, compared to just doing things and staying busy for the sake of staying busy.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I'll back it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So with the Able situation, what's funny is that I had essentially got to a point where I was selling the service kind of independently, working with trainers and getting them to purchase the package where they can get access to the app, et cetera. And it honestly wasn't making as much as I needed to take care of my family.
Yeah.
So I remember, man, it was actually right before I hit you. Like, I got to a point where I'm like, yo, I got to find a job. Like, I got to do something because this isn't cutting it.
Yeah.
And I remember, I'm like, yo, I don't want to do this. I don't want to fill out my resume again and do all, like. So, of course, I dust off my resume. I'm going through it. I fill it out. I find something that I guess I could, you know, do in the meantime. And literally, before I sent my resume out, I get a ring at my doorbell. I open the door, and it's just boxes of those Able scales.
Okay.
And I had no idea they were coming.
Really? Okay.
So that right there was God, because it was like, you can choose to live the comfortable life and do the 9-to-5 deal, or you can take a chance on yourself and move these scales.
Yeah.
So, of course, I dusted it all. I ended up closing my computer, and that's when we connected, right? So...
These scales had like new technology in them where you step on it, and it was hydration, it would connect to your app, and it would tell your coach what you weighed. So when you stepped on it, it would be like, or your accountability partner.
Right.
Essentially, it was a new age, and I was like, this is sick. And then, of course, my mind, you know, Chris.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there going, how cheap do you get these?
Yeah, right.
How many can we get? And then it was like a number that I liked, and it was under whatever. And I'm like, we got to sell 1,000. When can we get 1,000 of these? Because we could flip them for double, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, that's awesome, because you were literally filling out applications to like shut it down, which I've done. I went and worked for a guy, and luckily, mentors and God, I mean, God mostly, I'd be praying. I'm like, I don't want to work for anybody. I've been doing okay. But we're still in a townhouse, and I'd love a big house. And I'm still driving this Mercedes. I'd like the really nice 100%. Mercedes or whatever. But we get in that mode where it's like, okay, I can make this. I'm skilled. I can make six figures guaranteed. I don't have to hustle my own product anymore.
Right.
And I prayed about that. And then I had mentors, and God was kind of leading me towards multiple people told me to go look for, or to go meet this guy that was doing 20 million a year on Amazon or whatever it was. And I'm like, okay. And they would say, he needs you. And I kind of like that as a man. Anybody kind of likes that.
Right.
So I met him, and I was like, okay, God was telling me, I'm going to learn. I'm going to work here. And I was so transparent. I said, man, I'm going to be here for a year at the most, because I like to work for myself. But I can teach you things. I can help you, and you can teach me things. I don't know how you're doing this on Amazon. I don't understand drop shipping, but I'm going to learn everything about your business, make it better, hire the right people, because you're not good at that. Luckily, I met Chris, and I'm like, when we hired Chris, I was like, Chris, you're coming for a year, but I'm taking you because you're awesome when I leave, and I'm only here for this. And I told the guy that too. But it was the same kind of moment, filling out applications, and I was looking at, I was a superintendent for a little bit, and I'm like, I don't want to build houses. If I do, I want to build them for myself.
Right.
And yeah. I can do this stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like you're right about not everyone being built to be an entrepreneur. And Robert Kiyosaki, do you know Robert Kiyosaki?
Oh, so yes.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad famously, yeah. But he has another book. I think it's called The Cashflow Quadrant.
Mm. Yep.
He talks about basically the four different types of individuals, mm-hmm. you know, and where you basically need to find you know, where you fit in that quadrant and do it really well, because there are certain people that are just built to be employees, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Right. But there are certain individuals that are built to be entrepreneurs, and, you know, he kind of, you know, goes through the book and talks about the ways to maximize, you know, who you are and what kind of a person you are. But going back to that, so you get those, you know, those scales, and then, how did you motivate yourself and focus up to really become successful at that? And did you?
That you bring up a great point, right? Because with the quadrant, I think those are mindsets.
Yeah.
I think each quadrant is more of a mindset.
Yeah.
Granted, at the same time, I do completely agree with you that the employee, the business owner, self-employed, the investor, right? Like those are also all processes, I think. That you have to first be an employee before you can be a business owner.
Yeah.
Then once you're a business owner, then you become self-employed. You have that business essentially work for you. You don't work in that business, right? And then you take that cash flow and you create the investments to be able to make things work for you passively, right? So for me in that moment, I think I was still on that left side. I wasn't an employee anymore. I was a business owner. But I was also still working in the business to create something passive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I'm like, okay, I think I can take this and create something with that. And that's when, you know, again, I reached out to Kevin because I know he can, you know, snap his fingers and make anything happen.
No.
You know, but honestly, it ended a lot sooner. And I think that was just part of the process because I was so overly committed to this.
Sure.
And I wasn't really building anything that was mine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think to answer your question, how I got myself into that mindset to make it happen, I just had to make it happen. Like, it was just like...
Yeah, backs against the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, some of us do our best work when our back is against the wall.
Sometimes you need that.
You do, for sure. But you don't need to constantly put yourself in that position. I think a lot of us, myself included, we do that because of bad habits, because of, you know, refusals to, you know, accept the call. When I say accept the call, I'm referencing a book that I read back in college, The Hero with 1,000 Faces.
Mm.
And it talks about the story of the hero, and we are all the hero in our own story. And we're going through certain transitions, and we're going to all get a call in life that's going to test you and challenge you to go through certain challenges and go through certain tribulations, only to come back to your regular world better than what you were, because that was required.
Yeah.
So, and I think that honestly, it really encapsulates, you know, my life, your life, truthfully, everyone. But the ones that are really in tune with it, that understand, like, yo, this is part of the process,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's what it is. I think that's how you ultimately, to answer your earlier question, how you gain control instead of being that person that's doing all this stuff, right? Because at the end of the day, if you don't have a process in place,
mm-hmm.
you're going to mm-hmm. eventually fail.
Yeah, I'm a process guy. Kevin knows. Yes. You know, I worked in audit for 6 years, and you know, internal audit is essentially putting in place processes, you know, and systems of internal controls to maximize efficiency and effectiveness and all that stuff, mitigate risk. So where'd you go from there? You know, we mentioned before the pod, we were just chatting, catching up, and you mentioned you learned a lot, you know, in the last 8 years. Tell us a little bit about what you learned and some of the skills you've kind of gained over the last 8 years.
I'll start with just resilience, man. Like, resilience is a skill that you have to consistently get better at because it just gets harder the higher you climb. And the last 8 years, so my daughter's gonna be five in literally 2 weeks. It's crazy. Mm. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That when I found out I was gonna be a dad, it was my 29th birthday. And which was that? 33 now. So yeah. And 2019. Yeah, 2019. She was born in 2019. And at that point, I was honestly going through a roller coaster of life, like a roller coaster, because I would back it up a little. It's actually longer than 8 years. Like, what I've learned, I'd say even over the last, like, since I graduated from college. So, I think it's all important just so you guys understand, like, my mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Give it to us.
So I'll just take it back to high school. So when I left Riverdale, I ended up getting an opportunity to go play football in Connecticut for 1 year at a prep school in Connecticut called the Taft School. And I essentially did a PG year there where I got an extra year to play ball, stay on campus.
Prep school
life.
Fifth year of high school, right?
Yeah, which I highly recommend a lot of students look into if that's not on their radar. Because a lot of these New England schools would drool to have Florida athletes go to their school for a year and help their program.
For sure.
Not only that, you get to meet people from around the world and learn curriculums that you don't typically learn in high school, especially in a public school.
Yeah.
You know, so that I think started my whole transition going into leaving the ordinary life. Because I, you know, at that time when I was in high school, the mindset was D1 or nothing, right? Like, everyone wanted to go D1. And prep school was never considered because I didn't know it even existed. So when I got that opportunity to go there and, you know, stay there for a year, you know, like I said, I got to learn about certain things like South African democracy and apartheid. And that was such an eye opener, especially because my professor was very close with Nelson Mandela, was very close friends with Nelson Mandela. So getting to meet him and really learn those stories of oppression that very well mirrored what was going on in America, it was like, oh my God, this isn't just here, right? Like there's something wrong with this picture, right? So that started to open up my perspective on life in a way, but also athletically, I started to see things a little bit differently as far as my place and my responsibility, as far as, you know, being a leader and just being that voice and being that person. And play football there, they forced me to wrestle 1 year. It was crazy. I was 5'11", maybe 220 at that time. They made me wrestle heavyweight, 285. No, I was 215. Yeah, I was 215 wrestling heavyweight, 285. So I only, you know, I won 4 matches. Not too bad. Nice. My first time. But after that, I feel like that whole journey from Taft to Washington and Jefferson, where I got my degree, that was all by a chance of fate and God, I feel, because I had one of my teammates who played football at St. Vincent, and I would always check to see, like, how's he doing?
Yeah.
Like, is he putting up stats? What's the deal? And I remember seeing that they got blown out like 70 to nothing. And I'm like, who is this team? So I go and I check them out, and it's W&J. And W&J, fun fact, was literally founded by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Nice. Back in the early, I want to say 1700s.
Is it an HBCU?
No, it's not. It's a very small private liberal arts college.
Really?
Nestled in Washington, Pennsylvania, right outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So when I got to W&J, I had an entirely new mindset. Like, I didn't know anyone. The coach gave me a scholarship. I didn't even send him film because I didn't want him to judge me based off of my tapes. I wanted to come and just ball. because how I ended up getting the St. Vincent, which was crazy, one of the wrestling coaches knew the dean of admissions at WNJ really well. Mm. So he told him about me. 2 days later, I get a call from one of the assistant coaches, Todd Young, rest in peace. Mm. He called me up. He's like, hey, I heard you want to come visit WNJ. And I'd already visited a couple schools, but nothing had really like hit. So they flew me out there, stayed there for 2 days, and I knew it was a wrap. Like,
love it.
Fell in love, right? So when I finally got there, I had spent the entire summer training, because when I was at Taft, our head coach at the time, Panos Vulgaris.
It's a right. sick name.
Panos Vulgaris. He's like 5'8", just ripped.
Loaded.
Bro, full. I'm pretty sure he's like half Spartan. So he is Greek, but he trained us like we were in the Marines, bro. Mm. Like the Marines mixed with what they did in Sparta, probably.
Yeah.
And we had maybe 22 kids on the football team. So I was in the best shape of my life, put it that way. The only time I left the field was kick return.
Wow.
Right. So I go to WNJ, the best shape of my life. I'm in a whole new mindset. No one's going to touch me. No one's going to stop me.
Yeah.
Dude, I kid you not. I would get in practices sometimes, and there would be whole practices where I wouldn't get tackled one time.
Oh, my God.
Like, I remember just one practice. I remember one practice I carried the ball 10 times and scored every time I touched the ball.
That's
but
crazy.
I still didn't. I played on the JV team because at the time they had a JV team at D3 college.
Yeah.
They had a JV team. I'd do really well. And then when it came to varsity, I just never got a shot. And I thought the coach had something against me because we had another freshman that he favored over everyone else who would get in on the 1 yard line. And he scored like 7 touchdowns 1 year because the coach just put him on the 1 yard line, let him run it in.
Score.
You're going to tell, and I was clearly better than him.
Yeah.
But it wasn't my turn. And that's something I learned early because mindset-wise, I was physically able to do it. Like, I was doing things I'd never done ever.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting the opportunity to really showcase that, like, that I was the starter. And I blew it. Mm. And I take it back to my sophomore year coming in. Same mindset, best shape of my life. I'm clearly the best player to start. Running back, of course.
Yeah.
And we play against Del Valle in Philly, and we got blown out 28-0.
You were starting?
No.
No.
I didn't play.
Someone else. Okay.
He rotated the first two running backs that he had, and I didn't play a snap. Dude, when I tell you I was like livid.
Livid. Want to go home.
Livid. I'm like, yo, why am I wasting my time? Why am I here?
Were you scholarshiped?
No.
No. Loans.
Loans, baby. Man. Yeah. And
they tricked you.
We ain't gonna talk about that.
I'm kidding.
I mean,
no. We all went through it.
Yeah, we all went through it, right? So after that game, I remember the head coach coming up to me. He's like, look, we have a JV game tomorrow against Waynesburg, which is our rival. Just play a quarter. And I honestly took that as such disrespect.
Yeah.
I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, I'm like, whatever, right? Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'll go. But I ended up going to the game, and I remember, like, before, like, it was, I'll put it this way, just to be completely 100, right? Like, I was in my feelings, I was immature, and I did not play to my ability at all. Like, I didn't give a damn.
Yep.
Like, I got the ball, but, like, I wasn't doing the incredible things that I was doing, right? I was just like, whatever. I would go down on first contact. Like, I just mentally was not there. And I ended up tearing my LT band in my quad, and I missed the whole
season,
the majority of it. Back and essentially wasn't, and for years I lived with that, like, yo, this man tried me, this is his fault.
Yeah.
And honestly, I had a real man-to-man moment with myself, and it's like, you know, if you had gone out there and just done what you knew you could do, there's no doubt you would have been the starter, right? So that was my lesson early on in college. Like, get your feelings out of it. Sometimes you are being tested and you don't even realize it.
I've seen that so many times in sports. People get hurt. Like, I got hurt. There was one, I got hurt in college playing with, like, emotion. Like,
I'm just,
I get fired up. I'm a bad loser. But I see it all the time. Like, kids, like, I would always try to, when I was coaching, try to be like, hey, calm down. You know what you can do. Let it come to you. But same thing in life, man. I've seen, Chris and I have seen, and I've seen business owners acting out of emotion, especially men. Like we're very short of strong men in this country. There's not emotional. Many strong men that are leading, right? But if you act out of emotions in business and send messages before you think about it, emails, whatever, I've learned, we all know. But man, that gets you hurt too. It'll get you out for the season. Could get you out for life.
100%.
In that business field. So that's a good word. That
That's
good to realize early because you got guys in their 40s, 50s learning it right now.
Well, this was something I honestly had to come to terms with like 5 years ago when I became a dad.
Yeah.
And like I lived with that for a long time.
Yep.
You know, to where I would have dreams about playing football. It's like, why does this keep coming to me? Where I'm like on campus.
Yep.
So that right there, honestly, was such I did have a redemptive moment, I will say. And the cost, unfortunately, wasn't something that anyone would want.
Yeah.
Because my senior year rolled around and my best friend, who was the starting running back, his name was Tim McNerney. He was actually the first friend I met on campus. And fourth game into the season, he's our co-captain. Again, like top player we got. And just a regular Wednesday, I go out or he goes out with a teammate. I decide not to go because I'm like, I'm tired. I'm just going to lay, you know, stay inside. Yeah. I got class in the morning, right?
Yeah.
But really played video games till like 2 and then went to sleep.
Yeah.
But I remember waking up. It was like 5:30 in the morning. Someone's banging on my door. Yo, something happened to Tim.
Mm.
And I remember going down to the chapter room because I was in a fraternity at the time. We ain't going to talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have to do any weird stuff. Let me clarify. Like, I didn't have to do anything weird.
Yeah.
No, I jacked somebody up. They tried to do something weird. But I remember we were in our chapter room and someone just said they found Tim outside of campus. Just didn't. He was not responsive. And I didn't want to hear that. I'm like, he's all right.
One of your best friends.
He's like, he's all right. Yeah. Right. Like he's good. Tim's tough. Like he's, and I remember our coach calling us into the gym at 8 o'clock that morning. And he had told us they had found Tim outside of campus. He had died from brain trauma. So essentially what happened was a group of guys met him or jumped him and one of my teammates outside of a bar. And just petty crime, bro. They just blindsided him. He hit his head, took his wallet and phone and left him there.
Jeez.
And they ended up finding him outside of campus. So my thought is he tried to walk back to campus and that's where they found him.
Jeez. Sorry, bro. That's crazy.
And that was our fourth game of the season. Really right in the middle of the season. And I remember the following week we had a game against Thomas Moore, who was like our conference rival.
Yeah.
And that night, man, was just like, it was. So we had the vigil that night. We had a candlelight vigil with the whole campus. And I remember speaking at that. And his entire family in front of the crowd. Yeah. And that was probably one of the hardest things I had to do, but I knew it was necessary.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I realized that I have to be a leader for my team other than being the one carrying the football, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the next week, we ended up going to play against Thomas Moore. We got smacked, of course. No one wanted to play a game that day. But later in that season, we made a promise that we would win our conference championship at minimum for Tim.
Yeah.
Because that's something we said we would do every year
while
we were there. And it had been a few years since we had won it. And needless to say, man, we ended up having to play our last game of the season against Waynesburg, our rival.
Yeah.
They were undefeated. And we smoked them.
Love it.
Smoked them. And I remember being able to give the trophy to, you know, Tim's mom. Mm. And that was, again, one of those moments where I realized, man, like, life is so much bigger than...
Yeah. Than me,
than
right?
me, than wins than and losses.
Yep.
And that's like something that I would never want anyone to have to go through, but I feel like that was something again necessary that I had to learn to yeah. endure and carry on with, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to take all the weight of everything that's been going down and all the experiences, and I'm going to be the best, you know, at whatever job I can get, right? And that at the time when I was at WNJ, I thought I was going to stay on campus.
Yeah.
Because they had a job opened up in admissions. And mind you, at my senior year, after everything went down, I'd basically become like the spokesperson of the school where
yeah.
I would go meet students, speak at conferences. You know, I hosted the radio station
yep.
as a host and producer there. So like I kind of became like the face of the campus. So naturally, when a job opened up, I'm like, yeah. oh, yeah, that's
I'm
me. That's
here.
Me, baby.
yes.
Needless to say, bro, like I didn't even apply anywhere else. I'm like, oh, I'm going to stay at WNJ. Like, yeah. I got a job here. No problem.
Yeah.
I didn't apply anywhere else. I didn't even think about having a plan B. And lo and behold, man, like they ended up giving the job to someone else.
Wow.
Like, yeah, they ended up giving the job to someone else. So I moved back here to Southwest Florida in 2013 with a degree in communication arts with no plan.
Mm.
No plan. And at the time, the only real act, mind you, I'm in Lehigh Acres.
Yeah. Tough area.
And I'm in Lehigh in 2013
yeah.
before all the development.
Yeah.
Right. And I had no car, really. I didn't save up any money from college. Like, I definitely lived that,
yeah.
lived college to the fullest, right?
Yeah.
No future planning whatsoever.
Yep.
And I remember, dude, like, I left all of that to come back and start working just to make ends meet. I was working at a labor pool. I was working at the labor pool on Palm Beach
wow.
in Fort Myers. And I was fortunate to have that because, Troy's wife's dad, Rudy, the man,
yeah.
he ran the labor pool there.
Okay,
so he was
nice.
Like, yeah, come make some money while you're here.
So they call you like every day, right?
Labor so you pool, yeah, essentially yeah, essentially they call you every day. You get a new job, whether it's like lifting something or helping someone with the city or
yep.
moving. So it was like some a bunch of random jobs. And
yeah.
we would be out there for I would be out there for like 8 hours a day, bro,
mm.
and only come home with like 40 to 50, 60 bucks.
Yeah.
And
yeah, those labor pools I hire from for like special events.
Of course,
pretty
you do.
Interesting. If you're listening, it's a great spot to learn or to meet people, first of all, but to learn like other crafts because we hired a guy. I've met some great people, veterans. A lot of veterans come back and they do labor pools just to go out and get a job and they get placed. If you don't know people, you move to a new city. If you're listening, you can Google labor pools. I'm a big fan of them. You're not going to make a ton of money, but you'll get placed. If you move to a new city, you want to change, and you want to make something new, you could move anywhere in the U.S. and look up a labor pool and get placed and meet people right away. You're going to meet some sketchy characters
mm-hmm.
like DeAndre. No, I'm kidding. You're going to meet some people that are there for a reason and maybe not the same reason you are. There's a lot of people going through recovery and a lot of stuff working, but you'll run into some vets that want to work. You'll run into some people that want to get back on their feet like you
yeah.
or start something new in a new city. But I love it because you're doing new things where a lot of people need that. I mean,
right.
we're in a large portion of the world right now is ADHD or thinks they're ADHD and have a hard time doing the same thing every day. And it's
right.
a good spot to have something new every day. And you can pass. They could call you and say, it's a construction site. You want to go lay some concrete? Do
yeah.
you know how to do that? No. Do you know how to do it? I'll do the next one. I'll park cars. I'll scan tickets, whatever. So
yeah.
that's a good little plug. We've never plugged before, and I never thought about that. But
yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely a little side hustle if you're trying to make up, you know, make some quick change. And again, at the time, that wasn't terrible, right?
No.
But I knew I was capable of more.
Yeah, for
obviously,
sure.
Obviously, I had just finished. And I had a reality check.
Yes.
I'm like, I went through all of that, and this is what I'm doing.
Yes,
like. I went to this prestigious private arts college. I should be having a six-figure paying job, and I'm doing this. So fortunately, I was able to get connected with a good friend of mine from Barron who worked at Enterprise, you know, where they make you your own boss.
Yes.
And I was able to get my first big boy job with them, which I'm super grateful for, right?
Yeah.
Did that for about 3 years, and then I moved into the commercial truck department, and I feel like I went to Enterprise not only to learn the incredible, you know, learn lessons of just, you know, having a full-time job. And really, I will say that I do appreciate the quality training they have. Like,
yeah.
They genuinely want you to be great at what you're doing, which is renting their vehicles out, right? Yeah. Running a business. But I just couldn't get with the, and again, this is not a knock on anybody. I just couldn't get with the politics.
Yeah.
You know, just with any corporate gig, there's politics.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get with that. So I moved to the truck division, and I think me getting the truck was like the opening for me to meet the woman of my life.
Nice.
And because I got into trucking, and that allowed me to actually get out and network. And
yeah.
When I got into networking, I was able to go to an event in Cape Coral. And I remember standing up, doing my old elevator speech. And right after it was done, V came up to me. So, I have a client for you. And it was like, and it wasn't any like, you know, there, it was just pure business.
Connection.
And like, it was just pure connection. Like, hey, I genuinely have someone you need to meet. But it was just something about her in that moment. Like, it was almost literally like my heart stopped.
Hey.
I kid you not. Like, my heart stopped. I didn't even know what it was. But I was like, yeah, this is somebody I need to know.
Yeah.
And I remember sending me an email giving me more details about, hey, the networking events. I'm newer. I'm from the area, but like, I wasn't really plugged
active
into
in
the professional space that much. So when she sent me this list of networking events, I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to get back to you ASAP. We're going to link up and go to these networking events.
Love it.
And I completely ignored it for like three, 4 months. And I remember going through my email. I was like, oh my God, that's her. That's the one that sent me the email. I got to reach out to her. So I was able to reconnect with her. And then that just sparked years of friendship. And really, it was purely just associates. Like, we were, you know, networking together.
Yeah.
And then we got into certain businesses together. Then she started a nonprofit for youth boys called the Men's Network, which that was such a, you know, such a beautiful time, because that's when I knew that I loved her.
Yeah, love it.
That's when I knew
it. You knew you loved her, and you weren't even dating
and
her?
We'd already been together, like, known each other for, I'd say, 4 years at that point.
Yeah.
And like, it was just something that, like, I just knew.
Yeah.
And man, just one thing just ultimately led to another, where again, it wasn't even us, like, you know, like we weren't even pressing it. It just organically happened. And it's been the most beautiful thing that has ever happened, because that's what ultimately is what helped me turn the corner.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every successful man has a woman behind them. That's the foundation.
The team. Yeah.
You're a team. And that's, she was providing a level of support and love and empathy and just guidance that I'd never had.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
So.
No, she's a rock star too. You had to have looked, at first, you had to have looked her up and gone, what? This girl, single, running these network groups, running businesses, doing social media.
You would never know.
She's awesome. She's a rock star.
You'd never know.
No, but, putting good people around you, we talk about all the time on goated mentalities. Like, there's not many goats that don't put good people around them, that don't hire their weaknesses, 100%. That don't make people better, and then keep people around that make them better. Like, you got so many. I mean, when we were younger, I kept guys around that were foolish, that were fun to be around.
Right.
But they weren't making me better. It was
right.
Just a lot of fun to be around those.
100%.
And when I started putting people around me that are making me better, they want me to do better, and things change quickly.
Yeah, big time.
No, it's huge. And if it's a spouse, that's even better, because then it's the person you Netflix with, you hang with, you make kids with, and
yeah,
and that's your person that makes you better. That's a home run, like my wife too.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and I will say, when we we found out we were having Harmony, it was literally a month after we had committed to each other.
Nice.
Which was crazy.
Wow.
And that's when you saw the video.
The video.
That's when the video came out. And I remember, like, when I knew I was going to become a dad, at the time, the whole Able thing had just ended.
Yeah.
So I was working at Dunbar.
Yes, I remember.
I was working security
coaching
at Dunbar.
Okay.
And of course, I'm not making like $600 every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so of course, I'm like, this isn't going to support my family. Like, I'm not, what am I going to do with this?
Do
right.
Something else.
So, I ended up leaving Dunbar, and I jumped into the fundraising industry, because I met an individual that owned a very, at the time, credible AC company. Not going to name any names. Yeah. And he had told me about an opportunity to get into school fundraising.
Yeah.
And I was doing the coupon card. So you would have to go get the businesses, get them to commit. They get the teams to commit. The teams sell the cards. They get half the money, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Right. So I did that. I'm like, yo, this is incredible. Like, I'm really good at this. I love going out, meeting coaches. Helping. That's it. Right. And that didn't last long because I ended up leaving my job to do this full time.
Yeah.
And maybe 8 months into it, everything went down where company gets shut. His company gets raided.
He got in some trouble.
Got in some trouble. And then I ended up, he literally got left in the dust.
Yeah.
Right.
His AC company, the word is his AC company was doing stuff that they weren't supposed to be doing. But I think the competitor maybe did something or whatever.
Who knows?
He had a piece of this fundraising company. I remember that now because my dad's, we're all nonprofits, try to help kids and coaches and everything. We did some. You still help guys fundraise or still using some of the software or some of the systems you put in place for that, which is awesome because the dogs, same thing. They're still looking to do some fundraising other schools. And it's
tough. We just did one, which we can touch base on that here in a little bit. But that was, like I said, that was a moment that, again, I was being tested. And I just had to figure it out. My only lifeline gone, got a baby on the way. So I just decided to go and research other fundraising companies. I know it's a thing.
Yeah.
And I found SnapRaise. Yeah. I found this company, SnapRaise, I was working with. And I kid you not, like, I saw that job. I'm like, this is everything I'm doing, but better. I need this.
Yeah.
I filled out the same job application 30 times because I knew somebody in HR would see it.
Mm-hmm.
I called every other day pretending to be a coach because I needed to start a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Because I knew somebody would call me back.
Love it.
And then I locked in with everyone on LinkedIn. I just connected with everyone I could on LinkedIn. And they finally reached out to me. They're like, yo, I've never seen anybody go to this extent for an interview.
Yep.
And sure enough, I ended up getting the job.
Love it.
And I remember going to Connecticut. It was V's birthday weekend again. And I remember going to Connecticut for training. And I remember, dude, like, landing. Did I say Connecticut? Seattle. Excuse me.
Seattle. Same thing.
Yeah, still cold, gloomy. Actually, Connecticut is kind of beautiful. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of pretty. But Seattle is a different story. So I was out in Seattle, and I remember going through the training for the day, getting back into my room. And I just remember looking at myself, bro, in the mirror, and I just broke down crying. Like, literally just broke down because I could not believe that I was in a different position than I was a month ago.
Yeah.
Right. Because I didn't also say in between that time of me trying to get this job with SnapRaise, I was roofing. I was doing random roofing jobs to try to like make a couple hundred bucks. Yeah. Right. And if you've ever done a roof in Florida, it's not fun.
Not easy.
It's not fun, especially when it's 100+ degrees on the roof. Right. Yep. So I was doing that in between trying to just make ends meet. And when I got that job with Snap, I was just like, thank you, God. Yo. And I like, start crying. I start praying. I'm like, I will not waste this opportunity. Thank you.
Love it.
Right. And next thing you know, I got on the phone with V because it was a birthday weekend. We sing happy birthday. And then at this point, we're still trying to figure out names for Harmony.
Yeah.
And I have a whole list of names I'm going through and none of them connected. So I'm like, I'm not going to name my firstborn child, like just anything that someone is, right? So we get on the phone, we sing happy birthday, and then her cousin gets on the phone and she's like, all right, talk to you later. Peace, love, and harmony. And right when she said that, I got the same feeling, a heart drop feeling as when I met Arshelin.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, that's the name. And then I looked it up. I looked up the definition, you know, just harmony, just bringing things together. And V and I talk a lot about breaking generational curses and cycles and just being that example. And that right there was just like, yo, this God heard me.
Yeah.
And he always has, right? Yeah. So that was such a moment, right? And I did that for a whole year, built momentum, got teams on board, boom, COVID hits.
Yeah. Schools are shut down.
Schools are shut down.
Jeez.
Schools are shut down. And then that's how I got into Able and everything of the sorts. So You know, it's
constant.
It's a constant struggle, right? It's a constant battle. And I think how you respond to it ultimately is what's gonna set you up for the future, right? So
man, if you're listening, that I mean, all of this, it's crazy. I mean, imagine I'm sitting here going, we had little hurdles and little hiccups, everyone did, and it's like you gotta bounce back, get back on the horse. We all know that, but it a lot of times for me at least, I'm a feel guy. I root for the underdog somewhat. I like greatness. I celebrate greatness. But it's like you see other people go through stuff and you're like, man, I owe it. I owe it to that guy that's talking on this podcast right now. I'm blessed. I got to go grind today. I'm whining about my job. I've been at for 12 years making good money and I'm doing it half, you know what, half-hearted. Right. I'm doing it. So hopefully this motivates you because it is me. It's awesome. And I was going to say when you said leaving the school there, but fast forward, you're on the Greatest of All Time podcast right now. It's crazy. And I know it's only but up, but let's, I was going to say, I love looking at, and what I've been harping on the last couple of days, I had an Instagram post that I saw that had like all the list of the billionaires and when they hit billionaires. And that's not really a goal for me. I want to create, honestly, I was in counseling, which I think is great for some old adults. I'm against, but marriage counseling, right? Because marriage is tough. And I found out just saying one day, just talking about my feelings or whatever, that a ideal day for me would be everyone's happy. That works for me, works with me. Everyone's happy. I got to play golf, maybe spent time with the kids, and no one's mad at me. That's my perfect day. It's not on a yacht. It's not flying private.
Yeah.
I want those things maybe, but if God gives that to me, but I can't be trusted with it. Obviously I can't be trusted right now with a private jet or I'd already have one. But so it's not a goal of mine, but it was encouraging to see that these billionaires, and this hopefully encourages you, but these billionaires like hit these numbers. They hit a billion at 41. Elon Musk, 41. Mark Cuban didn't have a successful business till he was 38.
Wow.
Warren Buffett, 56 years old, is when he became a billionaire. He has the highest traded stock on the whole market, right? Berkshire Hathaway. So I saw that and I was like, because I always feel like, and you probably the same way, I feel behind.
Behind, right.
Man, like, yeah. I'm so... what is happening? This should have took off. I was there first. And now someone else is doing it. I did that. And when is God going to bless me with this and this and this? And it's so beyond that, I read like, and Chris and I talk and I'm grateful to have Chris and our team. But people that make me better and I'm learning even these last couple months that like as soon as I start putting people first, like you always have, I knew God's going to bless because you've always put others first. When you're networking, it's like, how can I help you? How can I bring money to you? How can I help your business? And that's why no one's ever been worried about you making
sometimes
it.
Sometimes to a
right?
fault. Sometimes to a fault where we do that, right?
100%.
We forget about ourselves.
But that will help. That'll boost all of your platform to succeed. That'll boost your whole plan. We all have a plan, but it'll boost when you put others first. But we're not behind. I'll tell you that.
No. We have to... understand that
the future's coming.
Be patient.
Yeah, and God's got a plan. I mean, God is the center of my life, and if I keep that the center, I've been blessed. I had a mentor in college say, yeah, it'd be great to go do this. It'd be great to hang out with this chick. She's the hottest in our sister dorm. She's the hottest in that sorority, whatever. It'd be great to go have fun with the boys and do this on spring break or whatever, but God won't honor it, right? And it's the same as an adult.
Right.
We have choices we can make. Hey, that networking group looks fun. Are they what's best for me? No. It's
right.
better if I go over here and work tonight and set up my Amazon account and make that run more efficiently. So it's those choices. And you guys all know that listening, but I felt like we had to share that because that was, I mean, all of that story is motivating. You're doing something in the Airbnb or the vacation rental space now.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, man. So I when I left Curate, which I was able to help scale to a multi-million dollar company in sales, like in 2 years, I actually took a step back so I could focus on, funny enough, solar. So I was doing solar for a minute.
Told you.
She's done everything. This man's done everything.
So,
yeah.
But the thing is, like, before solar was like a thing, because now you got all these solar gurus on, like, on the internet now.
Yeah.
Like, I was telling people 10 years ago that this makes sense.
Yeah.
for so many different reasons. Granted, technology is more expensive. It just wasn't the right time. I've talked about this for 10 years. So naturally, I jumped back into it when I found a good partnership, because that was one of the toughest things, is getting with someone that's credible, because there's so much fluff out there. There's so much misinformation. People are getting screwed on deals that they shouldn't have gotten into in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it was like, yo, I got to do this because there's so much negative around something that's so positive, right? And I'm not going to get behind the hippie side of things.
Yeah.
Just the truth is, it's the better option, right? So yeah. For me, I got into it selling a couple deals, and one of my clients was like, hey, you happen to know anyone that could help me manage this property? And I was like, well, I actually don't, but I can find out. And in doing research, I found these guys, Phoebe mm-hmm. Vacation Rentals, which stands for Four Investors by Investors.
Nice.
And they're based out of Vegas. And I connected with them because I found out that they were actually looking to hire someone to actually get their business going. So their business is already going. Let me back it up. So they started with multiple properties themselves. That evolved into a couple other people wanting to help manage their portfolio, and they tried to find someone to help them manage or to manage their properties, but couldn't.
Yeah.
Specifically for what they were trying to do within short-term rentals, right? And they couldn't. So they created their own systems from the jump, everything from the marketing, the pricing, the search engine optimization, guest communications, literally everything you need to run a passive investment. And I got with them like, yeah, I'd love to be able to connect with other property managers and business owners and people that have properties that are just sitting, right? Or they use it half the year, whatever it is, here in Florida. So I got with them on a contract basis just to really help them build a sales team. And it's been about a year. And I've known them for over a year. Just met them for the first time in February
in Vegas,
which is incredible in Vegas for V's birthday. And you know, we're up to 35 properties right now that we're all managing that are all cash flow positive. Love and it. That's, you know, my role has been really just to meet the right people, you know, because we run leads, we connect with people that have, you know, properties in like Lehigh, but I'm able to actually show them, this is why you should or should not
for
do
sure.
this. Like everything that we do, which has been really great for me, like I've been able to develop a new skill set in property management, but from an analytical side of things. Like I'm not just telling you need to get this 5-bed, 3-bath or what with a pool. And
yeah, this list. Is what the data.
Because the misconception is, oh, if I pull up, you know, AirDNA and I see this property is making $200,000 as a 5-bedroom, I should be able to do that.
Yeah.
Well, it's more to it than that, because a lot of times people treat their business, their Airbnb, like a property, like a second home, rather than treating it like a hospitality business.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at in, as far as, you know, getting people that are in that mindset, because, you know, I can pull up all the data and show you, for example, people are like, oh, it doesn't make sense to get an Airbnb in Cape Coral because it's oversaturated.
No. Yeah.
But I can show you there's actually specific homes that you should get if you want to be competitive. And that's what I'm able to do, is pull up the data and show you, hey, this is how much they made. This is how they price it. And we do all of that. We handle literally every aspect of that. So
it's for people looking to invest in a property or that already has a property.
So if you have a property, I mean, we'll help you from the ground up. If you have a property that you're looking at that you want to start and turn into an Airbnb, we'll absolutely hand walk you through that process. But we also do ideally would like to deal with people that have properties that are either under bad management, it's not performing the way you know it should, or you just want to take your hands off, right?
Yeah.
Like it is doing well, but you just want to take your hands off and trust someone to do that.
Yeah.
And what's cool about these guys, like this is a whole family-owned veteran company, you know, the two co-owners, Trevor and Cody, they're both in Vegas with their wives, Gina and Alexis, that all run a certain aspect of the operation, right?
Nice.
So I've been fortunate to be able to partner with those guys and work with, help some good people.
Love it. No, that's a good business right there.
100%, man.
So, what is, I know you've been on this journey. What's an author or a podcast or something that's helped your growth that you could lead to the, give to the listeners?
That's a good question. I mean, podcast wise, what's funny is I've actually been listening to a lot more audiobooks. So I will say the first one that comes to mind, I mentioned it earlier, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And that's such a book that I would say like really represents life. What's funny is I had a professor in college that told me this is the most important book you're going to read while you're in college. And it wasn't even related to like any it was a playwriting class.
Joseph Campbell, huh?
Joseph Campbell. There it is. I was Googling it. You're faster than me. Joseph Campbell, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. Because that's honestly the story of your life and how it continuously evolves. And then podcasts. I mean, I listen to a lot of different experts. Like there's Elijah Bryant in Tampa who flips land. There's a guy in, you know, we all listen to our guys, Earn Your Leisure.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's a good point because you have, I mean, it's the world of information. It's the information age. Every single, you could search any field and find podcasts, Instagram accounts,
anything.
There's no excuse.
You can get PhD on YouTube if you want to.
100%. 100%. YouTube. You could build a house on YouTube if you just Google it step by step how to build a house.
Yo, I've seen guys in the jungle build like luxury type homes out of nothing but clay, grass, and
sticks.
I love
those videos.
It's so wild. Like, I'm like, yo, that is there's no excuses. There's no excuses anywhere.
Who's the greatest businessman of all time in your mind? Maybe not to look up to, but if to look up to is great, but.
Of all time,
I guess in your field, who's flipping houses? I mean Gary Vee, but who's the guy? There's a world speaker that does. They started with flips, right? Didn't Tony Robbins start with like property?
I want to say so.
All of them started with properties, but learning from them obviously is huge. I mean, that's kind of saturated too. There's so many speakers now, and that's a tough grind.
It's hard. It's really hard for me to like narrow it down to like the one, right? Like the GOAT. Because I feel like they're all billionaires, right? So there's things that you can learn from each one of them, right? You can pick from each one of them. So like, I like Mark Cuban. I love Damon John. I love pretty much everybody on Shark Tank, minus a few. I'm not gonna name any names.
Great show, yeah.
You know, I watch Shark Tank quite a bit. Like, yo, I should be up there pitching something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I gotta pitch something. Just throw money at me. I don't care. But man, there's so many to choose from, and like for me, it's really just trying to find the bits and pieces from each one, right, that I can really relate to.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, for me at least.
How about athlete? You watch golf at all?
Man, no. The only thing I know about golf is Tiger Woods. Bro.
Tiger Woods
and Snappy Gilmore.
Snappy. We know Snappy. He's at our.
It's awesome.
We talk to him frequently.
Yeah. What about football players? Who's the greatest football player of all time?
Of all time, man, that's tough, yo. Because I mean, you got to do it by position. Because of course, people Tom Brady. Yeah.
Well, you're a running back. Who's the GOAT running back?
Yeah,
we're talking in their prime.
Yep.
Barry Sanders, number one.
Yeah.
I would say Adrian Peterson, for sure.
Yep.
No disrespect to any of the like older cats, but I'm just talking like pure raw like. Unstoppable LT.
Yep.
And this is honestly, if I had to put it in order, I'd go like Barry, LT, Adrian Peterson. Yeah, I'd probably start with those three. I mean, there's so many, bro.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, Derrick Henry's not even done yet.
No.
So he's going to be in that conversation.
Bo Jackson.
How can I forget about Bo?
He's got so many sports.
How can I forget about Bo? Oh, my God.
I think you hit it on the head. Barry's so – he used to glide.
Barry – okay, let me take that back. Barry, Bo, Adrian Peterson.
Yeah,
That's my top three.
I like it. I'm an AP guy.
AP?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had that little stint end of his career with the Skins,
yeah.
So –
yeah, but I'd give it to Tom Brady, though. Not because he's won so much, but I mean, partially, of course, because he won so much, right? But at the same time, like, he started at the bottom.
Yep. So true.
And just capitalized on his opportunity and never stopped.
So true. Yeah.
So, like, anybody that hates on Tom Brady, you're just a hater. Granted, yep. I've grown up a Dolphins fan whole life.
Yep.
So, like, we were used to getting torched 100%. By Tom every time, every Sunday, right? But, like, I have so much respect for Tom Brady because of, like, not only is he he still plays hungry. He's retired. And he's still out there.
Oh, I know.
He's still trying to be competitive.
Yep. So
and
true.
So imagine that, taking that mindset and putting it into business now.
Yep.
Right? It's scary. What do you think about
that comeback against the Falcons? Did it for me. I hated Tom Brady, but yeah, that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Unreal.
He's the GOAT. Yeah. I had to leave saying it. It's crazy. We got to give him one of our putters.
That's dope.
Yeah. So Tiger Woods has one of our putters. We got to plug Goated Golf more on here, but Goated Golf and Goated Pickleball are rolling. We got GOAT themed putters, and we're doing other clubs eventually, and then GOAT themed pickleball paddles, because pickleball's growing a ton. But Tom Brady has our putter. Tiger Woods has our putter. We got to meet Charlie Woods.
You didn't get a picture, no shout out. No,
so
from them.
This last 2 years, this is the last I'll say, but has been last year and a half, insane, bro. Like, I went to Tiger Woods, the match, and I got tour badges. We've been meeting tour players. We're literally in the locker room with PGA tour players, talking coaches. I was texting one last night. And I never asked for an autograph. My brother's always like, autograph, picture, nothing. I mean, I have these Ray-Bans that record stories every once in a while. And what's his name? We got somebody coming in to pick up something. I told one of the players on the PGA Tour that I was recording, because we were making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I'm like, oh, Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry's a big Irish, and he's major champion stud. But yeah, it's been insane. And that has all been a God thing too, because it's like choices. Like, started making choices. Like, we have opportunities. We're supposed to be in Miami right now. And if we didn't, we wouldn't have been recording this. Like,
hey,
we're supposed to be.
I appreciate y'all, taking time out of your day to get me on here.
No, it's a blessing. This
yeah,
is a
thanks
blessing.
For being here. I mean, your story is inspiring, man. And I think a lot of people out there listening are going to be inspired by it too, to just kind
for
of,
sure.
you know, persevere and be resilient. And you definitely encapsulate all of that. So
I appreciate you being here, man.
Where can people, you know, if you have a social media following, or if you want people to follow you or not, you know, no
problem.
Yeah,
no, definitely you can follow me. I'm, you know, on Instagram. It's just my name, DeAndre D. Simmons. That's DeAndreD Simmons, SIMMONS, at Gmail. I got to make it shorter.
Love it.
I just created another Instagram page. I'm going to start promoting my Phoebe brand. So it'll just be Phoebe, FIBI underscore Dre. I haven't done anything yet with that. I just created like 2 days ago. So that'll
awesome.
Be something you can reach out. But yeah, I mean, Instagram, social media. I don't have a website or anything like that yet. Still nice. Getting the pieces in place. So, but yeah, man.
Well, I'm pumped. Well, we're going to definitely have to have another episode.
Oh, we will. We will. 100%.
Where you're at now. Cause it changes for just like us. It changes all the time. And I love it. Proud of you. Pumped for you. God's got a great plan. Thank you guys for listening. Stay goated, and we'll talk to you next week.
Stay goated.